I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later in the hour, St. Louis Public Radio's Aaron Williams talks with St. Louis artist Kababi Bayok, who set out to paint one painting a day, every day for a year, depicting an African-American father interacting with his child, 365 days with Dad. And in our soundbite segment with Sauce Magazine, we're going to meet Chef Mike Randolph, who operates a restaurant in a restaurant. One by day, the other by night, with two completely different menus and staff in the same space. But first, the exhibition, Ken Botnick Topographies, opens this evening at Craft Alliance. Botnick is a professor of art and director of the Nancy Spiritus Kranzberg Studio for the illustrated book at the Sam Fox School at Washington University. Ken Botnick, welcome to Cityscape.
Thanks, Steve.
Your work can be found in collections in such places as the Library of Congress, the Getty Center for Humanities, and other collections literally around the world. But this is your first solo show in St. Louis. What took you so long?
Well, I've been in this dance with the people at the Craft Alliance for a while. And I think one of the reasons is that making books, you know, they don't fit into a natural classification. Are they craft? Are they art? You know, just what are they? And they're hard to display a lot of the times. So it takes a while, and I actually don't make that many books every year. So, you know, it's they're long in process, and production is slow.
And if someone doesn't know what you do or has not seen what you've done, it's sort of a hard thing to explain to a person with words what you do,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm very used to that. Yes, on airplanes, it comes up frequently.
Yeah, what do you do?
What do you do? Yes. Well, you know, explaining to people that you actually design or make books is, you know, people, first reaction is, well, what is there to design and make? And it's a, you know, it's a craft-driven process. I mean, part of me is the designer who really looks very carefully at the typography and the layout of the pages the matching of text and image. And then part of me is the craftsman who's really working on beautiful printing, you know, correct inking, the impression of the type on the page. And then a big part of me as the publisher, you know, is what I'm printing really worth publishing.
So we're not talking about like the paperback book I've got on my bedside table right now that I'm in the middle of. I mean, what you do, you're not going to find at Left Bank Books or B. Dalton, right?
No, they're very limited productions. I mean, limited editions have been anywhere between 150 copies down to 3 or 4 copies, depending on how complex the book project is. There are a couple in the show that there's one in the show that I collaborated with Mary Jo Bang, poet here in St. Louis, wonderful poet and wonderful collaborator, I might add. And her book I made only two of, but it's more of a sculpture than anything else.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did see an image of that on the internet, and I'll try to explain it, and you can explain it the way it should be explained. But it's the book, as you say, of the work of Mary Jo Bang, and it like has on the cover, these are my words, I'm probably not describing it the right way, but the text is imprinted on the cover, and like around the side of the closed book, there's also text on that.
Yeah. This is a form of printing that I don't know if I could claim to have invented, but I haven't really seen anybody else doing it. And when you come to the show, you'll be able to see the way the book is displayed. But the covers that you're talking about are actually a sheet of good old Missouri lead, and it's hand hammered with the text,
right.
Title of the book. Yeah, it's very heavy, that book.
Okay, so why? I mean, obviously, it's not for mass consumption.
No, there are a few. Why? Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that there are some of us, there's a tradition in this country that started maybe in the 60s when technology was changing and the old printing presses became available for very little or even nothing. People like me who were in universities around the country, I was an undergraduate, snapped up those presses and started publishing. I mean, it's in the great American tradition of having your own printing press and printing what you want.
So, but your books go into private collections, like I said, like the Getty Center for Humanities, the Library of Congress. So who appreciates your work?
Well, it's very interesting because it's a very limited distribution. Obviously, I'm only making a few of them. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, and they are very expensive. And in an odd way, one of the most democratic ways to get the books to people is to have them in collections that are used in shows. And those collections are seen and visited by thousands of people every year. So in fact, my books are routinely seen and in the special collections at Washington University, there are students in that collection all the time looking at the books.
How many people do what you do?
Well, that's a good question. When I started, everyone that I knew that was doing this work in the late 70s, 80s, referred to themselves as printer publishers. We were really publishing contemporary work, you know, Isaac Bashevis Singer, William S. Burroughs, really engaging contemporary authors. There are a lot of letterpress printers now who are not publishing books. They are actually just printing. I mean, partially thanks to Martha Stewart, she's popularized the whole endeavor of you know, going out and buying wedding invitations that are beautifully printed. Uh-huh. So fortunately, we've had a lot of young people who have really been able to make their name for themselves as printers. But as far as makers of books, it's a handful of people, really. I mean, the Codex Book Fair in Berkeley is biannual, and there might be a couple of hundred people there who are displaying their work from all over the world.
Well, I know you do it for the love of the art, and it's not something you did to get rich. I think you've said that you can make tens of dollars doing this.
Yes, that's my quote to the students every year. Yeah, but the book is at a crossroads. You know, we have been a book culture for easily 500 to 1,000 years. And so those of us who are working with the book now at a time of the Kindle and the Nook, we can expand into different directions, question the way it works in the world, how authorship works. Things are really changing. And the handmade object has a very particular resonance in the world.
We're talking with Ken Botnick about his exhibition that opens this evening at Craft Alliance and runs through the 24th of March. And you have a philosophy that goes against everything I was ever taught.
I'm told that quite often, Steve.
You say that you should judge a book by its cover.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think those old saws are kind of funny things. I think that the cover has a lot of resonance, but obviously the book as an object is a really engaging thing. We love them as objects. We like to have them on our shelves. We like to carry them. We like to hold them. But the beautiful thing is that what separates a book from a well-made mug or a bowl or a bench or a chair or anything is that it has these ideas inside of it. And so, you know, it becomes this thing that carries a lot more in this tiny package.
That's sort of what I was thinking about, too. So does it matter to you what the words say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything I do comes from the words. Everything I do. The form of the Mary Jo Bang books comes from the words. I've always considered myself probably first and foremost a publisher.
So your work includes more than books, though? Sculptures?
Yes, although the sculptures—
Furniture even?
Yes, but I still didn't get away from the typographic because in the show there's a table when you come in, and I think it might be the first typographic table. I call it my aha table, and the base is made out of welded steel letters, and on one side it says ah, and then you walk around the other side and it says ha.
I think part of a good way to understand what you do is to understand how you got there. And you began working with books, I guess it was in the 70s, University of Wisconsin, was it?
Yes.
And you studied paper making and letterpress printing, and you made paper.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, most of us who, when I get the paper off the copy machine, I don't think about the art of paper.
Yeah. It's I didn't either. And I was on my way to becoming what I thought I was going to become, a landscape architect.
Well, you worked that for a while.
Yes, I did. I worked in New York, actually, as a landscape designer, and did my graduate training in landscape design. But while at Wisconsin, I was just walking to class one day, and I passed a large stack of this really gorgeous blue stuff. It was paper. And when I asked the guy what it was, he laughed and he said, "It's old blue jean handmade paper." And so I made my way into the paper mill at Wisconsin and just started making paper like crazy. And the immediacy of the material, and I think your earlier question about why do it, the ability to have your hands on the material and to really think through your fingertips, to really feel that resonance of the material and the techniques and shaping of those things is really important to me.
After Wisconsin, you worked for the Yale University Press for...
Well, there were about 10 years in New York where we, my partner Steve Miller and I ran our Red Osier Press in New York, and then I went to work for Yale, yeah.
Well, you came to St. Louis in the late 90s to take a position at Washington University, and you were in on the ground floor of the Kranzberg Book Studio. Tell me how that began and how that evolved and changed over the years.
Well, Ken and Nancy Kranzberg have been incredibly generous, and I wouldn't be here had it not been for their gift to begin the book studio at Washington University.
What was their idea, do you think? What drew them to that?
I think that they were guided in that direction by former Dean of Libraries Shirley Baker, who was a great friend of the book studio, and also Professor Douglas Dowd, who's a colleague of mine at WashU, who I think helped to shape the original image. When I came, Nancy Kranzberg was one of the first people I met, and during my interview process even. And she's just been a terrific supporter. Every year they come to our annual open house, and we give out the Nancy Award for the best student book of the year. Mm. And she's terrific.
What do your students go on to do?
Well, we've had a number. Actually, you can go down to Cherokee Street and find a number of our former students working. Alicia Mann, Stephen Bryan, Amy Thompson are all graduates of the program and have spent a lot of time in the Kranzberg Book Studio.
There's the All Along Press and Firecracker Press down on Cherokee. They do interesting work.
Oh, all of them are doing great work. And it's an amazing thing to have that kind of concentration of activity in St. Louis. I really am excited by that.
And they're making tens of dollars?
I hope more than that. But we also have people, a number of our students have actually gone on to have trade publishers, commercial publishers, reproduce facsimiles of some of the books that they've initiated in our book studio. And we have students across the country now who I get to see them at conferences. They have booths next to mine selling their work. It's really exciting.
So in addition to the books that you produce, do you collect books, old books?
I have a very limited budget to do so. And I'll tell you, I don't have the collector gene.
Really?
So I really don't. No, I use the collections. I mean, our special collections at Washington University is one of the most amazing places I've ever seen. And it's just been the best resource for me.
Well, India has been a big influence. In fact, I think there was a time maybe still you go there every year.
I'm going on Monday. I'm leaving on another trip. We're taking a group of people that we are guiding through northwest India, looking at meeting craftsmen, artisans, and also some of the leading contemporary designers and architects.
Well, a year or two ago, you directed what they call the Village India Program. What was that?
Yeah. Through the International Studies Program at Washington University, we have a really marvelous program initiated by Professor Glenn Stone in the middle of Andhra Pradesh in a very, very rural area, partnered with an NGO where our WashU students go and teach enrichment courses to a local school that is a part of an education project. It's a marvelous program.
Well, what's the significance of India?
I think maybe the first significance is that it's like standing on your head for a Westerner. You know, it's very difficult to actually think logically in a Western way. So it's really good to have your thinking jarred and questioned as a Westerner. There's a big wide world out there. It's really exciting to watch the students as they come to realizations about their role in the world. A couple of the alums of that program are currently in India working with NGOs. So it's a very exciting thing. And as a designer, India is the birthplace of color and pattern and design. It's just incredibly inspirational.
Craft Alliance presents Ken Botnick, Topographies, Craft is a Pathway Towards Humanity, opening this evening, running through March 24th. In fact, there'll be an opening reception this evening between 6 and 8 at Craft Alliance, which is at 6640 Del Mar. And you're going to be doing an artist talk on Saturday afternoon at 2?
Yes, I am.
That at Craft Alliance as well. If you go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, we'll have a link to the Craft Alliance website and any more information that you want to know about that. You say that you are a craftsman at heart. What do you mean?
Well, I think that craft is one of those activities that it results in a certain stimulation of thought. I think making something really helps to generate thinking. Instead, I think we've got things kind of switched around in modern culture where we think we have to have an idea completely formulated before mm-hmm. something's made. Yeah. And so I get a great satisfaction out of making things.
Ken, you made reference to this earlier, and just one last thing I want you to comment on. In today's world, the digital era, Kindles, illuminated screens, doesn't that go against everything?
Well, actually, you know, I'm not one of those people that holds – I don't do this because it's a kind of an antiquarian thing. I actually think the Kindles and Nooks and everything are terrific. Let's face it, there are a lot of words that don't need to take up old trees to be able to be distributed.
That's Ken Botnick, Topographies, this evening through March 24th at Craft Alliance. Thank you so much for being part of the
show.
Thank you,
Steve.
It's really been fascinating talking to you. And coming up next on Cityscape, 365 Days with Dad, and later, chef and restaurant owner Mike Randolph on Soundbites. This is St. Louis Public Radio.